The Touching the Trail Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Touching the Trail Podcast, our weekly ritual of peace, presence, and perseverance. This week's episode is episode 163. And before we jump into what we're going to be talking about today, I just want to take care of a little business. First of all, you can support Touching the Trail in two ways. The first is that you can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to Touching the Trail. You can also go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. Functional, affordable, unique, and handmade handheld deep tissue massage tools. And both those links are in the show notes. Now, please excuse my voice in today's episode. I have a little bit of a sore throat. Maybe I'm getting a little sick. I'm thinking positively, and hopefully I will not be getting any sicker than I am. But the only symptom that I have of any type of sickness is a sore throat, and it isn't all that bad, but it does affect my voice. So, like I said, please excuse that. Hopefully I will get over that soon. We'll see. I don't know. I've been doing my best to try to drink lots of water, eat well, meditate, and get healthy soon, get back to 100%. I don't feel bad in any other way other than the fact that I have a sore throat. So, like I said, please excuse that. Now, this past weekend, my mom came up for the weekend, which was wonderful to see her. This has been the longest stretch for me, continuously up and slow for a while. I haven't been back home in about 3 weeks, I think, or more, maybe. No, yeah, like 3 weeks. So it's going to be about a month that I've been up here and slow before I go home back down to LA this weekend, which will be fun. So it's been kind of a big change for me, seeing as how I used to, well, not used to, but typically go home in the past two quarters that I have been doing here in slow, or, you know, at college, I would go home like every other weekend, which is kind of a lot, you know. So it was nice to just be here in slow and enjoy my time here and my space here and have some adventures here. So it's really allowed me to have a routine, have some consistency straight through in terms of training and studying and getting things done, and just build more of a continuous practice of my day-to-day life here in San Luis Obispo. But nevertheless, I'm excited to go home this weekend, and it was great to see my mom this past weekend. We did a ton of stuff. She was here. I saw her. Oh, she was here from Saturday morning until Monday around lunchtime. So what is that, like, you know, 48 hours and change. And we packed a ton of stuff into those 48 hours and change. We adventured up and down the coast here. We went hiking. We ate at vegan restaurants, relaxed at coffee shops. We went to the 8th anniversary bash of this art store here in SLO, kind of the art store here in SLO, the only one. And they had a bunch of great discounts. We picked up a bunch of stuff. We watched the elephant seals in San Simeon. We drove through the countryside. We walked around downtown. And we went to go see Cold Pursuit. It's a new movie starring Liam Neeson. It's directed by a Norwegian director that I had not ever heard of beforehand. His name is Hans Petter Moland. And I did not know what to expect going into the movie. I thought it was just going to be another kind of Taken, you know, with Liam Neeson, and just a fun action movie, but nothing special. I was wrong. It was thrilling. It was stylized to an extreme, Tarantino-esque, I would say, and it was wonderfully fun. The character stylizations, the pacing, and the small, small details that there were peppered in throughout the movie really, really made it for an exciting watch. I was locked into the movie the entire time. I didn't think about anything else but watching the movie for the whole 2 hours that I was sitting there, and so was my mom. We both loved it. So if you want a really fun, unique movie to go see this weekend, I definitely recommend going to see that. Also this weekend, we went to go see or visit Hearst Castle, which I've been to many times before, and it is one of my favorite places on earth. I told my mom before we went that I could live in Hearst Castle or in the Huntington Library and Archive and various things that I talked about a few weeks ago that my mom and I visited last time I was down in LA. And not necessarily because they're beautiful places, which they are, the Huntington and Hearst Castle, more so because of the history behind them, the history they have today still held within them, and the fact that they're simply wonderful places to spend time in, due to the amount of things you can learn from them, glean from them. Hearst Castle is, if you don't know, the magnificently beautiful and opulent, to put it into words, William Randolph Hearst home here on the Central Coast in San Simeon. Hearst was the newspaper magnate in the early 20th century, and it is now a California State Park site, but it was once a place which, well, he called it La Cuesta Encantada, the Enchanted Hill, or simply the Ranch. And that is where Hearst entertained the elite that he was friends with. As we were walking through on our tour, the tour guide mentioned many, many, many Hollywood stars during the golden age of cinema that visited and stayed at Hearst Castle. Winston Churchill even stayed there. Many, many people that we know through history as being famous spent time at Hearst Castle. Now, the impression that I always get when I visit places like Hearst Castle is twofold. The first is awe, and the second is pity. Now, awe stems from the fact that it's beautiful, it's detailed, and that it's overwhelming. And all of those things bring out that awesome emotion in me. However, the pity stems from the fact that all the beauty and the gold and silver and the grandeur and the art and the expanse of the place simply tells me, at least, and maybe this is a slightly cynical view, but I feel that it's true, that it was all an escape, that it was a materialistic salve for a soul that was unwilling to go within. Not to sound dramatic, but it's true. Now, I'm not dissing building something beautiful with the money you have if you have a lot of money and can build something like Hearst Castle. What I am discussing is, based on Hearst's personal history and the estate that arose from it, that material wealth will not lead to wisdom in his, in mine, or in your life. And that is something that I think rings true in all cultures, in all peoples, in all histories, in all philosophies, in all religion, and in all thought, really. This idea that materialism, that turning towards instant gratification, is not a solution to finding yourself, to finding enlightenment, to finding God, however you want to call it. Now, what I have found in my personal life, what I found in the various texts that I have spent much time reading, is that what will lead to wisdom is going within yourself and learning every day, as much as you can, as often as you can, who you are, who you truly are. Now, I want to share a parable, I guess you can call it, a Buddhist parable from the Buddha's life that is often told, and it features a man named Malung Kyaputra. Now, I'm not good with the pronunciations of these Indian names, but I will do my best. Now, I'm going to read you this passage with his explanation and commentary from Eknath Iswaran's translation of the Dhammapada. And this is easily, he is my easily my favorite translator of Hindu and Buddhist texts, and he the wisdom and light that he brings and shines onto these texts and his commentary and his explanation, his introductions, is unparalleled. So this is the parable, the story, the tale of Malankhyaputra and his conversation with the Buddha. Now, the Buddha's penetrating insight attracted many intellectuals, one of whom, Malankhyaputra, grew more and more frustrated as the Buddha failed to settle certain basic metaphysical questions. Finally, he went to the Buddha in exasperation and confronted him with the following list. Blessed one, there are theories which you have left unexplained and set aside unanswered, whether the world is eternal or not eternal, whether it is infinite or finite, whether the soul and body are the same or different. Whether a person who has attained nirvana exists after death or does not, or whether perhaps he both exists and does not exist, or neither exists nor does not. The fact that the Blessed One has not explained these matters neither pleases me nor suits me. If the Blessed One will not explain this to me, I will give up spiritual disciplines and return to the life of a layman. Malankhyaputra, the Buddha replied gently, when you took to the spiritual life, did I ever promise you I would answer these questions? Malunkyaputra was probably already sorry for his outburst, but it was too late. No, Blessed One, you never did. Why do you think that is? Blessed One, I haven't the slightest idea. Suppose, Malunkyaputra, that a man has been wounded by a poisoned arrow, and his friends and family are about to call a doctor. Wait, he says. I will not let this arrow be removed until I have learned the caste of the man who shot me. I have to know how tall he is, what family he comes from, where they live, what kind of wood his bow is made from, what fletcher made his arrows. When I know these things, you can proceed to take the arrow out and give me an antidote for its poison. What would you think of such a man? He would be a fool, Blessed One, replied Malunkyaputra shamefacedly. His questions have nothing to do with getting the arrow out, and he would die before they were answered. Similarly, Malunkyaputra, I do not teach whether the world is eternal or not eternal, whether it is finite or infinite, whether the soul and the body are the same or different, whether a person who has attained nirvana exists after death or does not, or whether perhaps he both exists and does not exist, or neither exists nor does not. I teach how to remove the arrow, the truth of suffering, its origin, its end, and the Noble Eightfold Path. Now, this parable is one of my favorite, and I read it a long time ago, a few years ago, and then I kind of lost it. I didn't know where I had read it, and I've been wanting to share it on the podcast for quite a while now, and I finally just recently picked up Eknath Iswaran's translation of the Dhammapada, which I just mentioned, which is where that whole passage I just read you came from. That was a direct quote, that whole passage there, and it was in there. So I'm glad I refound it again, and I'm glad I can share it with you, because it really does examine the fact that too often we are consumed by the surface level aspects of our lives, what they mean, how they function, what they are, and ultimately why they should matter to us, when in actuality, the answers are found deeper within. Now, that search for digging below the surface level has been explored and examined by countless various aspirants of enlightenment, aspirants of finding God, of wherever or whichever way you want to put it, but it has been done throughout the ages and throughout time. Now, this is probably, in my opinion, best examined and explained in the Upanishads. Now, the Upanishads are an ancient Indian collection of spiritual texts, a compilation of many stories and parables and poems and tales of the search for the self, Atman. Now, the specific Upanishad that I'm going to read to you from is the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And again, I struggle with these pronunciations, but I'm doing my best here. And Brihadaranyaka literally translates to of the great forest, which is really kind of the quest that we're embarking upon if you want to delve within, if you want to know yourself, if you want to live a fulfilled life, is entering into a forest that is deep and dark and mysterious, but it is one that we need to cut through and fight through and learn from nevertheless to be able to learn how to endure. Now, again, The version of the Upanishads that I am reading from is also introduced, translated, and commented on by Eknath Iswaran. He is, again, like I said, my favorite translator of Indian spiritual texts, and his series of the Upanishads, the Dhammapada, and the Bhagavad Gita is unparalleled. Now, like I said, Brihadaranyaka is an Upanishad. It is easily the longest Upanishad, but I am going to be reading you an excerpt of it, I guess you can say, a select portion of it, the first few chapters of the Brihadaranyaka, that features a conversation between a wife and her husband. The husband, Yajnavalkya, is leaving his wife, not out of spite, not out of anger, not out of issues they've had in their marriage simply due to the fact that he is going to retreat from the world to go into the forest and find himself. He is going to become an aspirant, and she wants to do the same. She also wants to find the self, Atman, the self with a capital S. And so she is asking him for advice, I guess you can say. And this dialogue is, as Isvaran says, one of the most enlightening dialogues that can be found in any spiritual texts anywhere. And I have to agree, it is simple and straightforward and to the point, which is kind of where its wisdom and its beauty comes from, and yet it holds a lot within it. Now, this is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, and it is the first few chapters, the first two chapters. Maitreya, Yajnavalkya said to his wife one day, "The time has come for me to go forth from the worldly life. Come, my dear, let me divide my property between you and Katyayani." Maitreya, "My lord, if I could get all the wealth in the world, would it help me to go beyond death?" Yajnavalkya, "Not at all. You would live and die like any other rich person. No one can buy immortality with money." "Of what use, then, are money and material possessions to me? Please, tell me, my lord, of the way that leads to immortality." "You have always been dear to me, Maitreya, and I love you even more now that you have asked me about immortality. Sit here by my side and reflect deeply on what I say. A wife loves her husband, not for his own sake, dear, but because the self lives in him. A husband loves his wife, not for her own sake, dear, but because the self lives in her. Children are loved, not for their own sake, but because the self lives in them. Wealth is loved, not for its own sake, but because the self lives in it. Brahmins are loved, not for their own sake, but because the self lives in them. Kshatriyas are loved, not for their own sake, but because the self lives in them. The universe is loved, not for its own sake, but because the self lives in it. The gods are loved, not for their own sake, but because the self lives in them. Creatures are loved, not for their own sake, but because the self lives in them. Everything is loved, not for its own sake, but because the self lives in it. This self has to be realized. Hear about this self and meditate upon him, Maitreya. When you hear about the self, meditate upon the self. And finally, realize the self. You come to understand everything in life. For Brahmins confuse those who regard them as separate from the self. Kshatriyas confuse those who regard them as separate from the self. The universe confuses those who regard it as separate from the self. Gods and creatures confuse those who regard them as separate from the self. Everything confuses those who regard things as separate from the self. Brahmins, Kshatriyas, the universe, creatures, the gods, everything. These are the self. No one can understand the sounds of a drum without understanding both drum and drummer, nor the sounds of a conch without understanding both the conch and its blower, nor the sounds of a veena without understanding both veena and musician. As clouds of smoke arise from a fire laid with damp wood, even so from the Supreme have issued forth all the Vedas, history, arts, sciences, poetry, aphorisms, and commentaries. All of these are the breath of the Supreme. As there can be no water without the sea, no touch without the skin, no smell without the nose, no taste without the tongue, no form without the eye, no sound without the ear, no thought without the mind, no wisdom without the heart, no work without hands, no walking without feet, no scriptures without the word, so there can be nothing without the self. As a lump of salt thrown in water dissolves and cannot be taken out again, though wherever we taste the water it is salty, even so, beloved, the separate self dissolves in the sea of pure consciousness, infinite and immortal. Separateness arises from identifying the self with the body, which is made up of the elements. When this physical identification dissolves, there can be no more separate self. This is what I want to tell you, beloved. I am bewildered, blessed one, when you say there is then no separate self. Reflect what I have said, on what I have said, beloved, and you will not be confused. As long as there is separateness, one sees another as separate from oneself, hears another as separate from oneself, smells another as separate from oneself, speaks to another as separate from oneself, thinks of another as separate from oneself, knows another as separate from oneself. But when the self is realized as the indivisible unity of life, who can be seen by whom? Who can be heard by whom? Who can be smelled by whom? Who can be spoken to by whom? Who can be thought of by whom? Who can be known by whom? Maitreya, my beloved, how can the knower ever be known? Now, as I said, that exchange is one of my favorites. I love the name Maitreya, the name of the wife, Maitreya. I don't know how to pronounce it. And this exchange has always stuck in my head as one that speaks deeply to me ever since I first read the Upanishads. Now, just a little explanation if you are confused on some of the terms used in here. Kshatriyas are soldiers or rulers. There are a certain caste in Indian society. And veenas are a type of instrument. So if you did not know what those two things were that were discussed here, that is what they are. Now, this section of the Upanishads, it really does unpack more of that idea of going within, like I was saying earlier. Instead of simply watching the waves crash on the surface, there is an ocean to explore beneath. And this section is yet, to me at least, another example of the interconnectedness of human religion, of human philosophy, of thought, and of belief. The first parable that I read to you, the arrow parable, if you will, was Buddhist. And this is, the Upanishads are not strictly Hindu per se, but they're not Buddhist. And yet they share so many similarities. And those similarities deeply extend to Christianity, to Judaism, to Islam, to Taoism, and beyond. And really, if you think about it, in some senses, those similarities are the self. They're the underlying connection that we all have in our pursuit of being better, in our pursuit of finding ourselves, in our pursuit of finding fulfillment in life, of finding enlightenment, of finding God, however you will put it. There are common ground that we all stand on. The ground that we stand on, if you will, that we all share is the fact that it builds the fact that we all come to largely the same conclusions if we just represent them and share them in different ways. And unfortunately, those small variances on the surface level have led to wars and hate and death and violence. When if you look a little deeper, they all share that same common core thread. And that thread really does speak of the self, the fact that the answers and the questions are all found within. And that truth is something that I just wanted to kind of examine, to kind of remind you of, to kind of share today through these two parables that have spoken so deeply to me in my life. And hopefully you will get something from them, some wisdom from these thousands and thousands of year old stories, tales, explanations of these quests that these spiritual leaders have gone on, that they went on, and what they found on the other side. Hopefully they can kind of send back a message to us, to you. And it was short and sweet today. I'm going to wrap up the podcast, mainly because of my voice, like I said, and just the fact that I, you know, again, please excuse me for any coughs or anything like that. I had to pause the recording here a few times to cough. My voice is kind of petering out now, but like I said, I hope that you found some wisdom and can find some wisdom in this examination of the fact that the messages go within. Boiled down to its simplest point is to go within yourself. So if you're interested in what Touching the Trail is up to, interested in finding out more about how you can better yourself, interested in finding out more about the intersection of endurance and spirituality and nutrition, head on over to touchingthetrail.com, read the writings, use the resources on meditation, on food, and recommended readings, and sign up for the Touching the Trail Weekly, the newsletter that I send out every Friday. You'll get, if you sign up for your first time, you'll get a Touching the Trail recipes free downloadable ebook and compilation of some of my favorite vegan recipes. And every week you will be part of the book crew, a book recommendation that I recommend to you every week, a spiritual quote breakdown, and a weekly challenge to help better yourself. You can also follow us on social media at Touching the Trail on Instagram, at Touch the Trail on Twitter, and the Touching the Trail page on Facebook. If you ever have any questions or comments, or just want to talk, feel free to reach out to me via the contact form on the website. And if you haven't done so already, make sure to subscribe to the show and share it out with your friends, your family, your coworkers, everyone who wants to better themselves. If you love the show every week, make sure to leave a review and let me know what you think. And if you want to help support the show, you can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. And as I've said many times before, this website, this company, is built and based in the Buddhist concept of dana, of giving, of generosity. And I cannot continue to build this tribe and make this a sustainable endeavor as a college student without your help. So if all of you listening today just do $1 on a monthly recurring donation basis, I will be deeply grateful. You can also go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak, functional, affordable, unique, and handmade deep tissue massage tools. And you can find out more about all of those via the links in the show notes. Now, going forward this week, I just hope that you remember the fact that the more you peel back the layers that are shielding who you are through meditation, through getting out of your comfort zone, and through broadening your mind, the more you will find the fulfilling path, your fulfilling path. And as always, please remember to go far, go further. And I thank you for listening to this week's episode, the short and sweet to the point episode of the Touching the Trail podcast. I will see you all next week for another talk. Thank you. The Touching the Trail podcast.